Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity, and mental health. Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. Today we have an interview that I never thought that I would have, and that is a politician actually emailed me and asked to come on the podcast. So a big welcome to the Honourable Rose Jackson. How are you?
I am very good. And thank you for replying to my email and agreeing to have a chat with me, because I think it's really important to provide space and time to platforms like this. So I just really appreciate your making the opportunity for us to connect.
Oh, look, I am not a particularly political person myself, but I emailed out all of the major parties and I've never had any response back. And you were the first response that I'd had back. So I was like, here we go. This is what I've been asking for, and I don't like speculating about what the government is doing. It's great to actually speak to somebody and hear from them. So if you are unsure who Rose is, she is the Minister for Housing, Homelessness, Youth, Mental Health and Water in New South Wales. And her team reached out to me in regards to some of the big changes that are happening in New South Wales. I went straight onto Instagram because I'm not a particularly political person myself, and I thought, wow, I've never had anyone offer to come on the podcast. Do people want to actually hear? I did a huge survey. We did over 10,000 people and 98% said, definitely bring Rose on. And then they submitted thousands of questions, which I've done my best to put into a small format on all the questions that people wanted to know. So if we start off, maybe we should clarify for people that aren't following some of the news, what are the major changes that are happening that we're seeing across some states at the moment?
Yeah, well, there is quite a bit happening in terms of just trying to make it easier for people with ADHD to access diagnosis and medication. And that's really come about because of the consistent feedback that I was hearing as the Minister for Mental Health in New South Wales about just how expensive it was and how time consuming it was. And I was hearing that feedback as a politician, as someone who was active in the space of mental health, of neurodivergence, but also as a mum myself, amongst mum networks, amongst friends, amongst colleagues. So we decided in New South Wales that we would move to allow general practitioners to both diagnose people with ADHD and initiate medication and treatment, and also continue prescription of medication for people that had a pre-existing diagnosis. That's similar to moves that other states had made, Queensland a few years ago in Western Australia. And since we've done it, a few of the other states have jumped on board as well, which is great.
Oh, I love it. I've been talking about that for a long time. So it was actually really amazing when I saw that come out. I couldn't believe that happened, actually.
I do want to say it's really credit to people like you and advocates like you that have been raising these issues for a long time. And I guess I'm sorry that sometimes it takes a long time to get politicians to listen, but really these things don't just happen. These changes happen because dedicated people such as yourself build platforms and profile issues, and people who've been out there talking about just how hard it is and how expensive it is and how time consuming it is for a long, long time. So thank you to you for raising these issues and continuing to raise them until we finally listened.
That actually has given me a little bit more motivation. Thank you. Sometimes you feel like no one's listening and you cop a lot of criticism, which I can only imagine that's how you would feel. That, I suppose, the politician game, isn't it?
I think just being active online and having a big platform, you get a lot of trolling. But I just think, I mean, I really feel like in terms of the work that you're doing, there are so many people out there who really agree with the issues that you're raising. And I'm sure they're very thankful that you're putting yourself out there. And certainly, as I said, I know people can feel like politics is out of touch and politicians don't listen. And often, I suppose, there are examples of that. But there definitely are also examples in this reform area where I have plenty of people in my personal network who either have ADHD or have loved ones who do, but this would not have been as prominent on my radar as a politician with lots of other issues in housing and water if it wasn't for people like you and the networks of people who have been consistently raising this issue. So eventually it does work.
That has actually given me a bit of motivation. Thank you. If we go back to one thing that I've really advocated really hard for in the last 6-12 months, and that's the medication shortage and also the increase possibly in demand with the GPs coming in. Are there any plans to look at the ADHD medication shortage?
Yeah, there are. So again, that's a big issue that has been put onto our agenda by some of the work that you've done and other people have done. It was discussed recently at the National Meeting of Mental Health Ministers, which includes all the states and the Commonwealth. So it's very much on our agenda. The Commonwealth government, the Australian government, sort of leads through the TGA on that. This is something in terms of the components of some of those medications that is it being experienced worldwide. We're very clear that we've got to be forthright in advocating for Australia's interest, and the Commonwealth government and the Therapeutic Goods Administration are going to try and do that. Obviously, as you would know, and people in your network would know, there are options where people can go and talk to their doctors about alternative medications or alternative therapies if they're finding that some particular medications are really hard to come by. I know that's not a perfect answer because for some people, they've either tried that or it's not going to work for them. We do have some domestic manufacturing capacity to make medications in Australia, and we're happy to try and scale that. But I should just say, Jane, one of the challenges is because those components of the medication are in a global shortage on the national agenda, and the Australian government is clear that the states want them to work to prioritise Australia getting access to these medications.
Oh, yeah, look, I agree. There's a couple particularly that've got patents on them and they're only available in certain countries. And we talk about manufacturing them locally, but the reality is you can't manufacture something that is patented and individual that is only available in a particular spot. I actually really appreciate hearing that it's at least been brought up and prioritised, because for a long time it felt like we were just talking and there was just no movement. That is what it can feel like on the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. So look, I don't have an answer now. You've rightly identified there's some complex issues here around medication patents and the source components, and even some of the like crazy global trade stuff has genuinely impacted, you know, how different countries access medication and access those source, those materials. So some of that stuff's out of our control. But I do want to reassure people that it was brought up prominently at that national meeting, and the Australian government was clear that it recognises there's a lot of demand for it to step up here and make sure that Australia's interest is being protected.
The TGA particularly has got some of the tightest laws, which we rely on to keep us safe. However, they could also get in the way of when we want to do something different. So it's a little bit tricky one, and I don't think there's a quick solve. But I suppose I was wondering, how do we see that working though with the demand increasing with the GPs? I actually am a little bit concerned about that personally, just in terms of my house running and also for the people that are already relying on it. I don't want to take away people not getting access earlier, because what you've done is amazing for accessibility. However, I am a little bit worried about the short-term future. Do you think there's anything coming that might make it a bit easier?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I do think that the Commonwealth was quite clear in terms of the medication shortage, that it recognised that that was an immediate and urgent priority. The changes that we've made, they're coming online soon, which is in September this year in New South Wales, will be allowing GPs to continue medication for people who already have a diagnosis. And that's very important because, as you know, people who already have a diagnosis in New South Wales, they're entirely required to go back to their specialist every time they need a new script. That's a lot of time and a lot of money. So that won't necessarily increase overall demand. These are only people who have a pre-existing diagnosis, although very important to me that they can continue to access medication easily and affordably. It is true that by the end of the year, in New South Wales at least, we will have new pathways for general practitioners to initiate medication and to diagnose new patients. So that may potentially put some pressure on as, you know, people use that pathway. But I'm hoping that by that time, by the end of the year, with that space that's created, we can work with the Commonwealth to make sure that people are currently undiagnosed, dealing with their symptoms in a way that's untreated, unmedicated. We want them to have that support. But of course, that's got to be done in a way where there's no point having a script if you can't fill it. Like, we accept that. So it's got to be done together with the work the Commonwealth is doing.
I think you've made a great point, because it's clogging up the pediatricians and the psychiatrists getting a repeat script. That is going to at least let those people see other people with other issues as well, without having that repeat script, you know, blocking somebody if they have more of a manic psychosis episode and they can't get in. So I think that's still an important step in terms of mental health overall as well.
We made some of those changes, as you're right, Jane, because we want pediatricians and psychiatrists to be seeing the most complex cases, you know, and for a lot of people that they don't need that level of support. You know, they're well managed, they're on medication. A general practitioner can play that role for them.
Moving forward, is there any long-term plan coming in terms of rural areas or anything like that GPs can kind of just diagnose and prescribe? Because I know from the platform, those women and children, families are really struggling.
Absolutely. And that is a major motivating factor for this change. So going forward, general practitioners in those local communities will be able to continue medication for people who already have a diagnosis. That's coming online from September. And from the end of the year, they will be able to initiate medication and give a new diagnosis for people who are waiting on those waiting lists. You're right, rural and regional areas, seeing a specialist is extremely challenging. It takes a long, long, long time. You have to travel long distances often, and it's very expensive. We've targeted our work with general practitioners to rural and regional communities. And I'm pleased to say that since we opened our expression of interest for GPs to do this work, we've already had almost 1,000 in New South Wales. And that's just been in the last 3 weeks. We only opened this expression of interest in early July. So I'm really pleased to see that a large number of GPs are stepping up to say they'll play this role. And we are targeting that to rural and regional communities where, you know, you might have that one GP in town. That person previously couldn't do much other than offer a referral off to some specialist. That GP will now be able to play that role. And to me, you know, I've heard just so many of the stories, and probably not as many as you, Jane, but many, many stories of mums and kids who are struggling and waiting and having to fork out hundreds of dollars. And that wasn't acceptable to me. So this is a major reason why we've made this change.
Oh, I think that's great. Are there any limitations to it? What about children? Like, are there anything like that we need to think about?
The only limitation at the moment is children under 7. So if your child is 6 and under, you will still need to see a pediatrician for an initial diagnosis. And look, the reason for that is obviously for very young children, we want to make sure that developmentally, if they're experiencing some big challenges, that we've got that real developmental specialist looking at them. So, you know, we're willing to look at that over time. But for those very young children, people will still need to see a pediatrician. But as you said earlier, one of the things that I'm hopeful is that as pediatricians stop having to see repeat patients just to fill a script, they will have more time to focus in on those challenging cases. For example, very young children with real behavioural issues. So that's a limitation. But if your child is 7 or up, or you're an adult, you have a diagnosis, there's really no limitation. You will be able to use a general practitioner to help manage, you know, your ADHD. And I think general practitioners are well placed to do this work. There is additional training and support for them. They're not just going in cold. We've wrapped additional training around them. But, you know, GPs are very highly qualified medical professionals. They deal with a lot of these kind of conditions, a lot of mild mental health conditions, a lot of, you know, sort of family issues, behavioural issues, neurodivergence. So I think they're going to be able to play this role very well.
So for all of the women and the mums who are on the wait list and they're in New South Wales, and let's say the GPs are coming in and actually putting their hand up and offering to receive training, which, to be honest, I'm surprised by, because I actually didn't think that GPs wanted anything else on their plate, and a lot of them actually don't kind of want to touch any more areas. So that's a great thing. How could a mum get their hands on or find a number or a place to go to get access to these GPs?
Yeah, look, I actually agree with you. I was unsure about the take up as well, Jane, and we had made provisions to really promote and encourage GPs to participate. But I've been so pleased at their willingness and enthusiasm to do this work. I think it's because they recognise it's really going to help the families that they care for. So really pleasing to see that a lot of them have put their hand up. If you're on a waiting list now, I'd say stay on it. I mean, you've probably been on it for a while. Don't pull yourself off yet. What you need to do is talk to your local GP and say, I understand that this is a pathway that is being made available in New South Wales. Me and my family would really love to take advantage of this. You know, have you put your hand up in the EOI? Are you doing the training? That would be something that's really valuable for us. Obviously, you can then assess if they have, fantastic. Over the next few months, they'll be able to play that role for you. If they haven't, you know, encourage them to do that. Say, for me and my family, we'd love to be able to see you for this care. If they're just really not interested, well, look, you could look at other GPs in your area. Again, I recognise that for some rural and regional women, that might be hard, but perhaps the next town over, the GP is a bit more willing. But you should feel free to talk to your GP. Say, we know you, we trust you. Why can't we come and see you?
Let's say if you called around a few places and no one was really doing it, is there a list anywhere that lists the ADHD-friendly trained GPs anywhere?
That's a really great suggestion though, Jane. So I'm happy to take that back to the team and say something like a searchable portal, you know, would be something that ADHD mums and families would find really useful. So if you'd leave that one with me, I'm very happy to go and see whether that's something that we could put together on the New South Wales Health website.
Yeah, I think it would be really helpful. One of my most popular free tools is when I go through pediatricians and psychiatrists who maybe have availability per state, or ADHD mums recommend them. So they say, okay, we had a good experience here, and we have that on the website. So I know that sometimes getting on Google can be a bit daunting. So if you could get a list, I would love to also put it on the list of everywhere in New South Wales that do it, if that would be something that could happen in the future. Otherwise, you're kind of just Googling.
Absolutely. I think it's a great suggestion. As I said, I think in the first instance, people should just talk to their local GP. And if we had a really easy resource that helped people navigate, you know, that I think would be very useful. So very happy to take that on.
I'm very, very passionate about the NDIS. I'm very well known for my NDIS advocacy. And a lot of people love my dark humour rants that I do around the NDIS. And I had a lot of NDIS questions ready to go. But from what I understand, that's a federal issue and that's not a state anything that you can answer.
Yeah, that's right. I know that people are pretty frustrated with some of the rules around the NDIS and the eligibility that the NDIA has put in place. You are right. That's a Commonwealth issue. You know, at the state level, we don't manage that. We handed over all of that sort of, you know, those powers and that role to the Commonwealth when the NDIS was created. There's two things that I would say, because I do know how important this issue is for you and for a lot of other mums. The first is, I'm happy to talk to the Commonwealth about the way that those requirements are set. I mean, look, as you know, it's all about functional assessments, and they have certain requirements that they put in place around severity and those things. But if your feedback is really that that's not working for a lot of people, I'm happy to, again, use those national forums to raise that. But also the states are doing more work now on some of those foundational support elements that's happening in the background and will come online. And I do want to reassure people, at least in New South Wales, that we really recognise that those foundational supports, early intervention in the schools, access to behavioural supports, access to those things that make everyday living easier for people who have ADHD or other forms of neurodivergence or are on the autism spectrum, we are working as a state to make that more available for people. These are people who are not eligible for the NDIS, who are in that zone. That is something that we are working on. So it's, you know, I just want to reassure people that that is a big priority for us.
Oh, I appreciate you saying that. I have always said with the NDIS that it's not that I think the advocates like myself with lived experience, but also the formal training, it's not that we believe that everything should be given to everybody and everybody should have some kind of blank check. That is not the belief of myself or a lot of the advocates that I know. But I do wonder at times when some of the legislation comes out, if there is any lived experience behind it. And it's not that I think we should be in charge or making the decisions, but sometimes I just think, how was that made? Because if you actually cut back over here, there'd be more over there. It's not a blank check situation in my belief at all. I think there's actually some really great changes that could also happen. Is there any way that or place that we could kind of talk to about that or even put in a report for someone else to read?
I think it's important to recognise that point around the system does need to be sustainable. As you say, it can't just be blank checks, anyone gets anything that they want, you know, and that's why those eligibility requirements around the severity and then the level of functional impairment are put in place. So I think it's good if that's accepted. But I also recognise your point. As the Minister for Mental Health in New South Wales, I just think the voice of lived experience across this area is just critical, whether it's, you know, mental illness or neurodivergence or whatever. They fail because
You can't have bureaucracy setting up systems that don't work for the people that need them. So
I don't know about whether the NDIA specifically does have a pathway for lived experience to inform its work, but if it doesn't, that is something that I'm very, very happy to push with them and advocate for with them, because I will just tell them, we treat the voice of lived experience incredibly highly and respectfully when it comes to our policy making in mental health, and it has made a world of difference in terms of the way that care is delivered. So that's something that they're not doing. I think that's a real oversight, and I'd be happy to talk to them about at least including that as part of their decision-making framework.
Oh, I appreciate you saying that. Sometimes I look at it and think, oh, I just wish that money could have been used slightly differently. I'm going to keep advocating because we have seen changes from that. And I might follow up with you and see if there's any way we can do that another time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm happy to put you in contact with some of my colleagues. So I know, for example, you know, the new minister for the NDIS supporting Mark Butler is Senator Jenny McAllister from New South Wales. And, you know, I know Jenny, and she's an excellent woman, a mum herself. You know, I'm sure that her team would be very willing to connect with you just to hear that feedback. But yeah, I think that point you make around how those resources are allocated to have maximum impact and listening to lived experience in those decisions is, as I said, very important. And recently, just as another example, the National Productivity Commission did a whole big, extensive piece of work about some of the national mental health agreements that we have. What was one of its core findings? Listen to lived experience. I mean, it's just coming up again and again and again. And I think that really reinforces the observation that you've made. And I'd be happy to help make that connection so that you can talk to the Commonwealth about your perspectives.
I'd really appreciate that. We've got about 1,500 jot forms with experience. It all created, but where shall we put that? I will connect with you offline. I know that there will be a lot of women on this podcast who have all contributed to that. What about compounded ADHD meds? Now, this has been a really tricky one because a lot of women online will say, just go to a compounding. You can get it easily there. But then there's this PBS question. How does that work?
Again, that's a Commonwealth legislation. You know, I mean, I don't say these things, Jane, to kind of try and avoid my own responsibility, but the reality is the NDIS, Therapeutic Goods Administration, the Pharmaceutical Benefit Scheme, they are Commonwealth schemes. So we are not able in New South Wales or at the state level to make changes, you know, to the PBS or how that works without agreement from the Commonwealth. So again, I'm happy to raise that with them. I mean, it goes back to that point you made earlier about, you know, they're trying to get that balance right between safety, making sure that people are receiving the right dosages of medication and the right mix. But yeah, sometimes those risk assessments or risk levels can be set at the wrong place and you end up having barriers to access. That's what was happening with diagnosis and ongoing prescription. That's why it was only specialists. There was this sense of, oh, we have to be so careful here. Only specialists can do this. That's nonsense. Actually, general practitioners can do this. They're highly qualified medical experts. So I'm very conscious of that issue of getting those settings wrong and being willing to change them. That's what we've done in New South Wales. But those Commonwealth things like the PBS, we'll have to just keep talking to them about whether they're willing to revise some of their settings.
Okay. And we've talked a lot about New South Wales, obviously, because that's your area. I have noticed that South Australia looks like they followed suit, and also Western Australia. For women that are listening, they're in other states. Can we see change coming across the states? Do you think that will happen?
Yeah, I think we can. So you're right. If you're listening in WA and South Australia, there are definitely changes that are being made in your states, very similar to what New South Wales is doing. So you should see that, you know, over coming months too. And you can talk to your local state member of parliament about those timeframes. Queensland had a bit of a system for a while where GPs can play a role. And I think Victoria is looking at it. And so what I would say to mums in other states who are unsure what's happening in their state or what want to see things change and improve, contact your local state member of parliament, contact your minister for health or minister for mental health, and make your voice heard. I know sometimes you feel like, oh, you make a phone call or you send an email and no one responds, or, you know, you don't feel heard. I just really want to say, as a member of parliament, those things do add up. They do. And particularly if you can get a group of mums together in your state and go as a delegation
you're more powerful than you think. It saddens me that sometimes people feel powerless in our political system. I want them to know that we do listen. And so if you're in a state which hasn't yet adopted some of the changes that you want to see, or there's other things that you want improved, use your voice, use your power. I think sometimes it takes a little bit of time, but you can have a real impact.
What about, and I know that, again, this might be out of scope, but this is just a question that just was probably the most asked. And I'd be remiss of me not to ask it regardless. Is there anything coming or in the works to help schools and teachers support children who are undiagnosed or unregulated, or they don't have their medication available? Is there anything coming to look for some improvements in that?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, don't apologise about asking questions in a broad range of areas, because I really recognise there's a lot of intersections here between health and education and the Commonwealth and the state. So I don't mind at all. Yes, is the answer to your question. So again, in New South Wales, we're rolling out wellbeing nurses in our public schools. As the name describes, they are specifically around student wellbeing and the issues that you raised around getting children diagnosed, supporting them on their medication and treatment journey. It's the literal job of those wellbeing nurses. That's what they are all about. So that's one thing that we're doing. We're also just providing more funding for schools to be flexible in terms of meeting the needs of their student community. Again, this is something that I've heard a lot of feedback on, say a very rural or regional school, a school in an affluent suburb, a school in an area with a lot of disadvantage. They need flexibility in terms of, say, maybe they have a high number of students with an ADHD diagnosis and it's just about supporting the teachers with medication and behavioral interventions. Maybe a particular school has a high number of students with behavioral issues who are not diagnosed and are not receiving treatment. And so for them, their priority is different. In New South Wales, we're resourcing schools flexibly to make those local decisions. The other thing that we have done, again, this came out of the recent national meeting of all the mental health ministers. This issue of these kind of ADHD impacts in our school was raised, and every jurisdiction was required to go back and have a joint meeting of health and mental health ministers and education ministers to discuss this. We'd actually already started that in New South Wales, but we're going to be doing more of that. It's linked to that foundational supports issue that I raised, the state stepping up, trying to do more there. But I can completely understand why this was raised again and again and again by your listeners. It's been raised many times with me too. And it's really on our radar because, again, the whole reason we wanted to make these changes in New South Wales was get a diagnosis early, get a treatment plan early so that, you know, we can have the best lives for our kids, because we know that if they're supported at school, they have the right treatment, we recognize that.
I completely agree. I think that will be great. Is there any changes coming to education of teachers or anything like that we can look forward to?
Look, I'm not sure whether that's a national priority. I can talk to the education minister. In New South Wales, yes, we have a lot of specific professional development courses specifically for ADHD, neurodivergence, behavioural issues that we are providing to our teachers. So that's above and beyond the very general stuff that they get in the university degree, and they get a bit of that. We recognise that we need to provide specific courses and training, and we are doing that. And I'll just have to check about whether that's being provided nationally, but certainly that's the case in New South Wales.
One thing that the families just spoke about a lot in the big survey that I did about what we could possibly ask you was around families being forced to pay twice. So if they change a psychiatrist, they re-enter care all of the time, it seems like, we are then charged to be re-diagnosed. I was just wondering why and if that can ever change.
Look, this is a hard one, Jane, because those are sort of private appointments and private psychiatrist arrangements. When you engage with a new specialist, you know, often, as you say, they will require, you know, an initial assessment. Certainly the states can't make laws that are not allowed. If something like that were to be the law, that would be done federally. But these are often private, as I said, like private arrangements. One of the reasons why we have made the change to allow general practitioners to do this is to try and avoid that for people. My vision for the future is that people will only be required to see a psychiatrist or a pediatrician or a specialist if they have very complex needs. Some people will. general practitioners will be able to play a real role supporting people through diagnosis, supporting people through treatment and medication. You won't need to go and join new lists and wait a long time and pay those specialist fees again and again. That won't be part of the world that we live in, at least in New South Wales. So whilst I can't say in New South Wales that we're able to make those kind of things illegal, I can say we want to create a pathway where you're only seeing a specialist if you have very, very complex needs or co-occurring ADHD with some kind of autism spectrum disorder or some kind of intellectual disability. But for the vast majority of people, that's not something that they need to fork out money for or wait a long time for, because they're able to get that care through their family doctor.
So if you go, I don't really want to see this telehealth psychiatrist anymore, I actually want to see someone in person, you have to pay like $2,000, for example, for a reassessment. And I actually thought that was something to do with the government and the way that that was working. But so I'm actually wondering whether that might be private companies saying that, and that may not actually be true.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, my understanding is, of course, when you engage with a new doctor or, you know, a new specialist, they will want to do some form of initial assessment, you know, get a sense of where you're up to. Although I completely recognise the point where, you know, we are able to do transfer of care between specialists, between doctors. You know, that's something that obviously happens as people move or doctors retire, that doesn't really require a full assessment of someone, the cost of thousands of dollars. But yeah, the charges that are done, you know, by private specialists are something that the government doesn't set those amounts. We don't determine that. It's a little bit, in a way, of a supply and demand thing. You know, that's, to be honest, why it's very expensive, is a lot of people want to access this kind of care and get this treatment, and there's not a lot of people who offer it. So yeah, it's very expensive. And I am strongly of the view that with a little bit of training and a little bit of support, which we are offering for free to general practitioners, they can do that work. And that's, I think, going to make it a lot easier for people, because yeah, general practitioners are part of almost all of our local communities.
I think that's a great point, though, because if we were to change the supply and demand, and as you said, we had more practitioners available, we may be able to find practitioners that don't force you to do the reassessment. But at the moment, as you said, supply and demand, they can really ask for whatever they want. And you call around, they all say the same thing. But in time, that may actually ease up some of that pressure, I think.
Exactly. As I said, I think, you know, specialists obviously play a very important role for complex cases, for people with complex needs. That's what we want them focused on. In my view, seeing people had a diagnosis, being, you know, on stable medication, being treated fine, just, you know, for repeat script. That's completely, it's a waste of everyone's time, to be honest. And I think breaking that link, changing those supply and demand dynamics a little bit, is going to be really good, obviously, for mums and families. And that's really what I care about. I would also say it's going to be good for doctors too, because I imagine specialists, when you do that level of care, you know, you really want to get into those challenging, complex cases. That's what motivates you. So I think hopefully everyone will see that this is a sensible step.
Is there anything that you wanted to add that you haven't mentioned, or anything before we finish up?
No, I mean, I guess I would just say, really happy to keep the conversation going. So even just behind the scenes, because I find this engagement really valuable too. Like, I get ideas out of it and sort of pointed in different directions by you and your experience. So I just want you and your listeners to know that, at least in New South Wales, we're really interested in this conversation. We're really interested in this engagement. As this rolls out, as these changes are made, maybe we won't get it perfect the first time. Maybe we'll, you know, get the settings wrong and we'll need to revisit them. And we just come to that with a really open mind. We don't pretend everything we do is perfect the first time. So it's an open invitation for you and your listeners, at least in New South Wales, to continue to engage with the government as we reform the system, hopefully to benefit people. And yeah, happy to hear feedback about what's working and what's not working.
I really appreciate your time. And I know all of the listeners will appreciate that we've actually got a politician or someone from the government on the podcast. I think everyone was a little bit thrown when you sent the email. So thank you so much for your time. Not everyone is willing to come onto a podcast and answer questions and have it released. So really appreciate you. I think that was a really big thing to do. And I suppose it shows the way that the world is changing with social media and the way that people engage in the news. So I really appreciate it. Thank you.
No, my pleasure.